Bloomington Normal.
Cut into this lead as Lee dribbles, gets doubled. He's at drive. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No, it's good.
She got it.
Katie Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into the WZND studio for this edition of The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. As always, I'm Mikey Frinelli, joined by Dane Dreyfus and our special guest host tonight, Blake Borgart. How are you guys tonight?
I'm excited. It's the first day of NFL football. How can I not be?
I am honored to be filling in the shoes of the great David Moses.
Yes.
Sad he can't be here tonight, but
David headed out to Seattle to see his sister and his new niece. So it's very good news for him and his family.
I doubt they're listening, but if they are, congratulations. That's a fun new addition to the Redbird family.
He did say that he's going to try and listen later when it's back online. That's a chance for me to advertise that every Red Zone show is actually posted online after the fact. It's usually up about half an hour after the show. So if you ever miss any of our segments, please go back and listen. And we're going to have a great segment today you're going to want to hear. We're going to have Winkers Wright, an ISU running back, in studio in about 15 minutes. So that's a segment you're going to want to listen to, that live interview. I'm excited for that.
This is one of the best shows we've had in store in a while.
Yeah, hopefully we don't blow it. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. So, guys, we're going to start a little bit with some ISU volleyball before we get into football. I know it's going to be a pretty football-heavy show with, obviously, the NFL kicking off tonight and ISU football well in season. But we're starting with some volleyball because they are the hottest team in Illinois State right now. They started last weekend 3-0 with their nice Redbird Classic sweep. And as I said to Blake earlier, hosting your own tournament is one thing, but sweeping your own tournament that you host is another thing. That's just impressive.
I don't know what to say. You literally just, teams come to your arena like you expect nothing less, and the Redbirds took care of business. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely impressive, and that's one thing about the Redbirds at home. I mean, they're 3-0 on the season at home so far, obviously sweeping the weekend. So that's going to be really critical for them going forward in the season, looking at that schedule, seeing what stretch of games they have where they're at home. You know that they'll be able to build some momentum as they stay on at home, and then they go back on the road to face off against some of these other Missouri Valley Conference teams.
I also think, too, like we talked last week about like the storyline of resiliency, and I feel like I nailed that, not trying to toot my own horn, but there's just been every time that like you feel like they're down and out for even just one set, they just don't, they are so resilient and they don't give up. That's what I love about this Allie Matters coach team is mm-hmm. when I'm watching, I never feel like we're out of it.
No, and this team, exactly, and it's interesting that you brought that up, Dan, because they already have two improbable comebacks in 2022 when they beat Cincinnati in five sets in the first weekend, and then Green Bay they also beat in five sets. That was last weekend. So they are still from behind, which is something they did in years past under Leah Johnson, too. It's not always a great thing, though. You're tiring yourself out against teams that you could beat faster, but it's obviously always good to get a win.
Well, absolutely, but I mean, you talked about come from behind wins. They only got stronger as the weekend went on. Against SEMO, Southeast Missouri State, they led in every single game. They didn't trail at one point. It did end up going into overtime in the second set, but they did sweep that 3-0. So just an impressive display by them, really, to get better as the weekend goes on. And they had 12 service aces in the SEMO game alone, which was the most at Redbird Arena since I believe it was September of 2006, where they
Crazy.
Had 15 against Northern Illinois. So this team is just aging like a fine wine, and I'm excited to see what Allie Matters is able to do with this team going forward.
Isn't it crazy that they didn't have that many aces in a weekend in any of the Leah Johnson years? I mean, they're on a streak here where they've been to the NCAA tournament 4 years in a row.
Yeah.
So that's already something that Allie Matters has done with this team that maybe they can already improve on. You can't wait to see what else is coming for them.
I'm a big advanced analytics guy, and I really like taking a look
sabermetrics.
Yeah, sabermetrics. I like taking a look at the splits because I really feel like that can tell the story of a game. And it really also, like, if you lose a game and it was really close and sometimes you win the splits, it's kind of like the popular vote versus the electoral college. It's like, sometimes it doesn't tell the whole story.
Good
but
analogy.
I was looking at the splits, which are points, kills, aces, blocks, assists, and digs. And in the three games that they played this weekend, they won 15 of them, tied one, and then lost in two. But I do want to mention that the two they lost in, and actually the two they lost in and the one they tied in was blocks. So I wonder if that's an area for improvement, even in a 3-0 week where you sweep the weekend. Is that something they can improve on defensively?
Absolutely.
They have
that line of blocking. They're not known for their blocking. They're usually more known for these outside middle hitters who are, you know, very strong in the attack. But they do have a great line of blocking blocking wall right along the net. I mean, Caitlin Prodzinski, Nicole Lund, and all of the above. And then they have the addition of Regan Haith and Ida Shadowald. And so all together along the net, they can get huge blocks. It's just that they're not known for it. They are known to be a somewhat smaller team over history.
I also love, too, that this team has a great blend of veteran presence and youth. I mean, Shadowald has been an absolute revelation as a freshman. And then you have Sarah Kushner, who's really a do-it-all player on the court. And she hasn't really necessarily led in any stats, but you see her all over the score sheet.
We talked all about Ida Shadowald this week in one of our classes the three of us have together here at ISU Comp 271 because we did a project, an opening for a game, and we had to do the opening for the SEMO and ISU games. We talked all about Ida Shadowald that game because she was our player to highlight for the Redbirds.
Really, she is just so impressive. I mean, she is a true freshman. She was a four-year letter winner coming out of high school. She actually came over from Wright State with head coach Allie Matters now.
Yeah.
And so it's great for her to be on this lineup, but you guys were talking about how we're traditionally a smaller lineup. Guys, I'm looking at this roster. I'm seeing 6'2 Cassie Jordan. I'm seeing 6' Caitlin Prodzinski, 6'1 Nicole Lund, 6'2 Reagan Haith. This team has gotten bigger in recent years, and it's interesting to see that they still have that mix of smaller players sitting around 5'6", but they do have that towering presence now to match up with other big teams at the net.
And speaking of the youth movement too, not just talking about Ada Shadowald, but Reagan Haith got Missouri Valley Defensive Player of the Week, and that's another freshman too. And honestly, the defense is probably going to run through her, leading the way in a lot of blocks and a lot of defensive categories. So it'll be really important to see this youth continue to grow and build, especially for the years coming on. But still, you're still getting the production from Caitlin Prodzinski, who was just Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Week in general. So it was really just a fun weekend for the Birds. And I was nervous about a negative streak starting, especially when they had a good weekend the previous weekend going 1-2. But now that they go 3-0, they're on the right foot of a streak. And Allie, I can't stop raving about her. Like, this is awesome.
I love that you bring up Caitlin Prodzinski because she's on a hot streak right now. She has led the Birds in kills in the past four matches. I mean, that sort of, to have that level of consistency with a player over and over and over again and have them stand out like that, it's not a commonality in volleyball at all. You've got a lot of different girls on the floor at all time who know what they're doing, especially at Illinois State, dare I say, Volleyball University.
I mean, in recent years, we're looking at a year this year where if they make it to the NCAA tournament again, that would be the most years in a row in Illinois State history. They had four another time in the 1980s. Long time ago, but now here from 2018 on, we're looking at a historic streak that was started by Leah Johnson and could be not ended but continued by Allie Matters.
I think one of the most impressive things from this weekend, though, is that before the game on SEMO against SEMO, they played the day before and they played Oral Roberts and they played Green Bay in the same day. And that Green Bay game, like you said, it went to extra points in two sets and then it went to a fifth set where Illinois State came back and won. But the next day, they go and sweep SEMO, showing zero fatigue. Like, that is impressive. And it wasn't just, like, these weren't three close sets. Maybe the second set, went to extra points, 27-25. But then the first and third sets, 25-18 and 25-16, outscoring them 50-31. Or, no, that's bad math. This is why I'm a communications major. 50-34, but by a combined total of winning by 16 points. So it was a lot of fun to watch the Birds, and they scored a lot.
So taking a look ahead for next weekend, they're going to be heading on the road to Memphis. That's going to be quite a bit of a drive for them. You know, I think the longest distance they went this season was, of course, to Cincinnati. But
yeah.
I think that they really have a chance here to build on some of the success that they've been having recently. First off, they start off against Oakland. Oakland is a 3-3 team. They haven't really shown anything special up to this point. They've been in a ton of battles where they've barely eked out of games. Then they play Queens University of Charlotte, who's 2-5 right now. I think that that should be an easy win for this team. Then they face Memphis, where things might get they might get a little bit hairy there, but I think it's going to be a great test for them down the road to be, you know, a sample size of what we could see for them if they were to have an NCAA tournament appearance once more.
And absolutely, because these, like you said, Blake, these are teams that were decent last year and were other teams on ISU's level last year, whether or not they're still there. Oakland, 15-15 in 2021. Queens Charlotte in 16-13 in 21. So they had a nice year. And Memphis, 13-19 in 2021. So not as good for Memphis. But looking at Oakland, which Blake and I discovered is not California, it's Michigan. Oakland and Michigan and Charlotte, Queens, they both had strong seasons last year. And it's good to see them get wins or at least competitive sets against out-of-conference teams. Because, yeah, not every matchup is going to be Purdue or Michigan State or Wisconsin or any of these huge Big Ten opponents they've lost to in the past. No, you have to get the wins when you can against other non-MVC teams, and that's how you stack up, and that's how you don't end up seeing a Big Ten team in the first round of the tournament.
And getting these three wins at home, too, is huge to go back on the road, because you obviously went 1-2 on your first road trip, but now you're going into a brand-new one, and hopefully if you can take that one, too, you get on the right foot where you don't build bad habits on the road. Because playing at home and playing on the road are two completely different animals, especially in volleyball.
Well, I think especially when they're in the same place for a whole weekend for a tournament. Maybe if you're in one place for just a night, I don't know if that's an advantage or disadvantage. I was going to say I think it's a disadvantage to be there for the whole weekend, but I don't know what you guys think. Maybe you feel more comfortable if you're there for multiple days in a row.
I think as you play, you get more comfortable, but as a person that's never played volleyball, I was a hockey player growing up. I know for a fact that like the longer I was in town, I did get more drained for like these road tournaments.
Yeah. I mean, you get drained, but maybe you become more comfortable if you're playing at the same place. You get used to the bright lights if it's a big arena or something like that.
Exactly.
Well, I will say that for quite a few of these games that they have coming up in this tournament, it's going to be they are early games. They start off against Oakland at 9 a.m.
Right.
I can't think of a time where the Birds played that early in the morning.
They had 10 last Friday, but that was even then it felt really early. So 9 is even earlier.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't know how that is going to play over for them, especially with being traveling on the road. But then they play the next day, 4 p.m., and then noon against Memphis. So we might see them stumble early on in the tournament this weekend. But ultimately, I think that they'll flatten out and they'll show a greater performance as time goes on, just like they did this past weekend, as I mentioned earlier, how they were getting better and better as it went on.
It will be really interesting to see if Caitlin Prodzinski can stay on this absolute heater. She had 21 kills. She had 21 kills against Oral Roberts, which that's a lot. That's a lot of kills for one game. and winning Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Week. Let's see if she can repeat that, too.
Well, it's interesting because in the first press conference of the year or after the first home press conference of the year against Oral Roberts on Friday, she didn't even know she had her career high. But when somebody told her in the press conference, she said, well, it makes sense. Because this year, having lost a couple of offensive weapons, she really sees it as a year for her to step up into a huger offensive role. Which she's been good in the last 2 years, don't get me wrong, but now she's an upperclassman, she's a junior, and she is the main offensive tool for the Redbirds aside from Sarah Kushner, without Tamara Otenay or Aaliyah Moore. So I think she is embracing that fully so far.
And it's nice to see, too, like, I think Blake talked earlier about the service aces being really important. And then that was the story against SEMO. 12-1 was the score in service aces. So, like, you can tell that this is definitely an offensive team and gets scores quick points right off the rip.
Yeah.
So sort of looking ahead down the road even further, you guys, we got the University of Illinois coming up very soon in Milwaukee. How are you guys feeling about that game? Because Illinois currently stands ranked as number 25 in the country. They are 1-3 at the moment, so I have no idea how they're ranked in the top 25 AP poll. But I'm curious, what do you guys think? If the Birds come out of there, do you think that they're nationally ranked possibly?
You never know, and especially with a rivalry game like that, I kind of throw everything out the window because your blood's pumping, adrenaline's going, and the pressure's all on them as the nationally ranked team and a Big Ten school.
Yeah.
And this Illinois State team is no slouch. Like, they won the Missouri Valley Conference last year. They were a tournament team. So you're going at, like, it almost smells like a trap game for U of I, especially being 1-3. Like, I personally would – I like the Birds in this one.
You look at – ISU in general, but ISU volleyball against the Big Ten. And ISU volleyball against the Big Ten in recent years has not been super successful, you know, losing to Wisconsin and Purdue in the tournament in years past. But they have seen a lot of the Big Ten when it comes to volleyball. And those are big players usually, tall players that get above the net. And so you're imagining that obviously, it's a tough challenge in U of I. We talked about it last week with Wisconsin and ISU. We got to be real with ourselves. Players are playing in the Big Ten Athletic Conference because they are good at what they do. Mm-hmm. So this is, together, a good team at U of I. But there's always weaknesses and there's always ways around it.
Well, one of the last things I want to hit on before break is the body language of this team, though. You can tell the chemistry is there. These girls, mm-hmm. like, they look happy while they're playing, which is sometimes there's growing pains with a new coach. I haven't seen them, so I really like the culture that Allie Matters has brought to the table.
And what's crazy is there are so many freshmen on this team, as we mentioned earlier. That just tells me that so many seniors and so many upperclassmen on this team are leaders. They are leaders, and they have built this culture up so much that it's going to continue to carry over no matter who comes in the door next.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to have ISU football's Wankers Wright. He's going to join the show and talk a little bit about just life and the ISU football team in general. We'll be right back on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
And welcome back into the WZND studio. We're joined by Wankers Wright, a running back for the ISU football team. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm very blessed to be here. I'm very, very excited for this opportunity, no doubt.
Yeah, thanks for coming in and doing this interview with us. I know that you had a pretty big game at Wisconsin last week, maybe even more than you saw the field a little bit more than you thought you would, I would say, with the injury to Cole.
Yes, I would say that is correct. The injury happened so early in the game, the nerves had not even set in for real. So I was out there pretty early, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of that next man up mentality. So I
Absolutely.
Had to just take it and run with it.
Did you guys get a chance to, like, go on the field before the game and just take Camp Randall Stadium in so you weren't, you know, shocked when you got out there for the
Yes.
first quarter?
Yes, we did. We had – I think I was about out there for about, like, 30 minutes just warming up and just looking around, and everything was just breathtaking. It was probably the best football experience of my life just from
really,
scenery
yeah.
and stuff, yeah.
Was that the biggest stadium you've gotten to play in?
Oh, no doubt. What was it, like 80,000
oh, yeah.
capacity?
I mean, Blake learned we were all on the call there, so Blake, you learned
something.
I was
something not. I was there as a fan.
Yeah,
I was
there as a fan. Yeah.
I was on the Wisconsin sideline tripping for you.
Oh, at least helping us out.
Yeah, I was trying.
Blake, what did you learn about the seating? They took some seats away in the
yeah,
offseason?
Yeah, so actually Camp Randall initially was 80,000 and some change or whatever, but in the offseason they actually revamped and added in some new suites in there, so it was only about 75,000. So believe it or not, that stadium was louder at some point than what you were playing in down there. Can you believe that?
I cannot believe it, because especially during that jump around part in the
oh,
fourth
God.
Quarter, I had a friend, he was up there and he was sitting where the concrete was solid. But with everybody jumping around, that concrete slab was, like, shaking.
Yeah, oh, did you feel it on the field?
Yeah. I did feel it on
oh
the field.
Oh, my God.
That's how crazy it was, especially when they got the pick six, too. That might have been the loudest part of the game. Where
yeah,
the fans
it
were
felt
all
like
going
it.
Insane.
All right, so maybe off football for a second. But so you've been in Bloomington Normal for 2 years now. Where is your favorite spot to go get food?
I got to say Chipotle.
Really?
Oh. Yes, I got to say Chipotle. Back at home, all we have is Qdoba. And
okay.
so I tried Chipotle, and I don't know if this is going to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's not even close.
I'm with you.
I'm a Chipotle stan, so that's a good answer, but I'm kind of surprised you didn't go with, like, something more local. Like, everyone loves Pub 2 cheese balls. That gets a lot of hype. The burger baskets at Brujas. I'm trying to think. Am I missing anything?
Well, even if you're talking about similar food, La Bamba in Uptown is also a good burrito spot if you've ever been there. But
is that the spot with the sushi?
Yeah, they got sushi and burrito. It's a weird combo. So yeah, we just want to talk a little bit more about maybe the football side of it. So why was it ISU for you? When did you commit to ISU, and why was it about it that you really loved?
It was during COVID, so I never had an in-person, like, official visit, but I did have a Zoom meeting with all the coaches, and something about the coaches, they were just really genuine and personal. So I sat down with my parents, we watched the Zoom meeting, and after that, we just decided on that school just from the coaches' experience and what they could offer me.
So I actually know that your head coach, James Bragg, from Floyd Central High School, he's actually an Illinois native himself. He spent a little time coaching in La Salle, Peru, which is just 40 minutes up the road from here. How much of an impact did he have on you in making this decision and your coaching or your career playing up to this point?
Yeah, he had a pretty good impact, because he was always reaching out to me, texting me saying that some coaches were wanting to reach out to me. And just and another standpoint, he had family member here, like you said. So they were already rooting for me before I even came here. Before I even committed, they were like, we can't wait to watch him play in Illinois. But since then, Coach Bragg has been a huge part of this, and he's always wanting the best for us players and the future for football.
Well, Wankers, too, I think you might have one of the best names in football. I got to ask, do you have a nickname on the team by chance?
I do not. They call me Winkers.
Yep. Really? You know, I would like to offer you a nickname that we were talking before the show. I mean, your initials are WW. Like, what about Dubs? Or what was the other one?
Is it Double Dub or Dubs, something like that?
I do like Dubs.
We were surprised
really
that wasn't given to you by the teammate or anything. Yeah, I did a little sign with it, too. But talking about maybe more on your team side of it, who is somebody on the team who you really vibe with when it comes to road trips and stuff like that. Who is somebody who's like the guy on the road trips, maybe with music or games or stuff like that?
I think I got to go with two because my roommates for the past 2 years, Daniel Sopkowicz, the receiver, who had a pretty decent game at Wisconsin. So we should see some pretty big things coming out of him. And then Kylan Stevens, all three of us, we kind of vibe. We're always getting along. So I would say on the road trip, I would probably find myself gravitating towards them the most.
We always love to hear about what goes on, you know, behind the scenes and even just those human moments. Aside from Camp Randall, so maybe thinking more about last year, I know you did redshirt, so maybe it wasn't as often, but where was somewhere that you played that you really enjoyed?
That's a good question. Oh, I think I like South Dakota. Really like the weather up there. We were so far north, I'm not a cold person.
Yeah.
We stayed in this hotel called Canada Inn. So that tells you how north we were, but at the same time, the hotel and the stadium were both connected, so we didn't have to step foot outside, and it was a dome. It was a dome stadium as well, so I really liked that experience, not having to go outside, but the hotel was extremely nice, and it was, like, really nice. It was probably the nicest place.
Very nice.
And I think going back to the game, too, against Wisconsin, because I think some of the fans would probably be interested in that, with the Cole Mueller injury happening, did you get to talk to him? Like, how quickly did you get to talk to him, especially with the situation with you going in, getting more playing time?
It was actually a lot quicker than I expected, because I thought he was already going to the hospital or something. But right after halftime, he was on the sidelines, already bandaged up and on crutches. And I just went over there and I told him I'm praying for him and hoping him for a speedy recovery. Then after the game, I also got to talk to him some more. I took his bag. I got everything taken care of for him. I carried his stuff, got him situated and everything.
Well, that's awesome on your part. It seemed like there was not just Cole, but a couple of players on the ISU team who went down in the game. What do you credit that to? Is it something with the field, or was it something on your guys' side, or Wisconsin?
I don't know. I really couldn't tell you why, but it might be just Wisconsin, really, because, you know, we came in, we hyped them up a lot, so the nerves were there. But at the same time, I think we overhyped them, if I'm being honest. But at the same time, we had Jack Dwyer. He went down, but it looks like he's going to make a pretty speedy recovery. He went down on a kickoff return.
Happy that Jack's going to be able to make a speedy recovery there. Kind of diverging off of the Wisconsin game now, I wanted to talk a little bit more about you yourself. It's my understanding that you were born in Haiti, actually. So coming over to the States, how did you get interested in football growing up?
It's actually a funny story. I was actually really into soccer, me and my brother both, but in the soccer, in the orphanage, we played soccer barefooted, so everything was just rougher. So I went from soccer in an orphanage barefooted on gravel to a soccer with cleats and grass, and I was just tearing it up, but I was too aggressive. So my dad was like, let's put you in an aggressive sport, and since then, I have not looked back.
So how old were you when you moved to Indiana?
I was 6 years old.
And with being an aggressive sport, was it always running back for you, or did you get some defensive playing time too?
It was running back, but I was both sides, so I got some safety, linebacker at one point, and some corner. I think I like corner the most on defense.
Well, you know what they say is that corners are wide receivers that can't catch, but we know you can catch, especially after that 26-yard reception against Wisconsin.
Yes, so I've really been working on my catching for the past couple of years, and it's improved tremendously.
It showed the other day. I saw on Instagram that you were running track in high school as well. What was your career like for that?
I think it was pretty good. I had a few hamstring injuries, but at the same time, you know, when you're healthy, you just got to take it. I picked up hurdles my junior year, so for 2 years I picked it up. And I somehow made it to state, very blessed. And I had a pretty good group of guys, great coach, and we were all like family during track. So I wouldn't miss any of it.
Do you think we'll ever get to see you hurdle over a defender, like maybe in a big play on offense?
Oh yeah,
it's coming.
Oh,
all
it's
right,
coming. Well, I should have done it last game on that sideline. As soon as I got tackled, and when the guy hit me low after that catch, I was sick to my stomach.
Well, if any of us
would have jumped him, I would have scored.
If any of us are on the call when that happens, we'll make sure to say that he called it back in the booth in September.
Hopefully here soon.
Well, also, too, like, you might have the chance to do that on the big screen, too, because NCAA 23 is coming out soon, and Illinois State has a team, if I'm not mistaken, from the previous one. So are you looking forward to that coming out soon?
I am looking forward to that. Seeing your name on, like, a video game, that's dreams right there.
Speaking of video games, you put up video game numbers in high school, 4,200 career rushing yards there, and that's very similar, actually, to ISU alum James Robinson, what he put up in high school. And as I was watching you in the Wisconsin game, I was like, he kind of looks like him a little bit. So I was wondering, do you model your game after anyone, and who's an NFL player who you inspire yourself from?
I think the running back I inspire to be the most is probably Alvin Kamara, just because of how shifty he is. And he's not an overly big guy, but he just gets skinny in the hole, and he hits you hard, and he can catch really well, too. So I think I would like to be him one day.
I mean, also, too, like, you really did show that you have that wiggle as well. And going up against a tough team like Wisconsin, what was, like, the most impressive or difficult thing about playing a Big Ten team like that that's a perennial, like, national contender?
I think probably the most difficult thing was probably on kickoff return because me and the back returner were back there excited for a return opportunity. But, you know, at that level, they just cook everything in the end zone.
I noticed that. Everything was going over your guys' heads. And you think that was on purpose?
It was on purpose. Their kicker, we already game planned against him, and he's like 80%. It's going in the end zone. So we knew coming in we wouldn't get too many opportunities to take it out.
Why do you think that is? Why do they not want you to try and run it back?
Well, if it's deep in the end zone, there's not much sense to really taking it back because you're just going to lose yards
Yeah, but no, I mean, like, why do you think they wouldn't even try to kick it to you guys?
That's a good question. Like, I feel like a team like them, they would want to kick it to us and see what happens.
Exactly,
really.
Yeah.
So I think they're scared of you.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Gas yourself up for a little bit.
No, we're definitely going to go with that. I definitely saw fear in their eyes running down the field.
So turning to Valparaiso this week, that's going to be on Saturday here at home. Are you excited to start your home schedule, and what are you guys game planning for this week?
Yeah, I'm very excited. Our main game plan for this week is just to respect your opponent, not to fear them, respect them. So, you know, that'll give us that opportunity just to give our best in the game. So we're excited to kick it off at home. We're hoping to have a really big crowd and just, you know, put on for Illinois State.
Is your game day preparation going to change at all with, like, a little bit more of an increased workload most likely?
Yes, I think so. I'm really going to have to just tone in this game because, you know, now it's looking like I'm the starting back and then we have a really powerful rotation coming in too. So it's just really making sure I'm in the game mentally.
What's your relationship like with your other running backs behind you now? Because I assume with what we saw in Wisconsin, you're going to be splitting some time a little bit with a guy like Nigel White. So, you know, what's your relationship like when you're preparing with your teammates like that?
Yeah, us running backs in the locker room are always next to each other before a game. So, and then off the field, we're always together at coach's house doing stuff. We have a little Madden Mobile League going on. And so, so I think we're a pretty close group of guys, and we're always joking around with each other on the sidelines and stuff. So I love every single one of them.
Do you have a fantasy league too?
Yes, we do.
I was going to say who's the best Madden player, but who has the best fantasy team looking into this week?
You know, Coach O had a pretty good run last year, but I'm going to say me. Even though the season hasn't started, I'm feeling pretty confident.
Who's on the squad this year?
Let me think. I have Davante Adams. I'm a big Packers fan. I'm
disappointed. God.
Oh, I love this. This is my new favorite player. Oh, my gosh.
I'm disappointed I didn't get Aaron Rodgers, but I got Matthew Stafford. And let's see. Aaron Jones from the Packers.
PPR or non-PPR?
No PPR.
Ooh, that might be a little tough with Aaron Jones.
We're going to see what happens. But I'm feeling confident.
So some of us are Bears fans here, but Dane is a Packers fan as well. So that's what the groans and the cheers were for.
What are the chances?
What does the Packers thing come from? Is that something that in Indiana a lot of people were, or where did that come from?
There's the Colts there too for now.
I'm saying there's Packers fans in Chicago.
Just has good taste. Let the man live.
That's a question I get a lot, but they have the same colors as my high school and my middle school, green and gold. So growing up, I was like, they look like my high school. So does Waubonsie Valley.
Yeah, I went to Waubonsie Valley in Illinois, which is also green and gold. So it was so much fun being a Packer fan there.
I like you already.
Oh, I'm blushing right now. Can people see that through the radio?
Thank God they can't. But Wakers, it's been great to have you on. So we're going to round out the interview pretty soon. But just looking forward to the rest of the season, what is something that you guys are just really aiming for as your big goal at the end of it?
Well, the big goal is just to, you know, next man up mentality. We know Cole went down, so Coach O is really relying on us backs left to just hold down the fort while he's gone, you know, put on for our team. And one of our biggest goals is to have really good ball security. You know, the football wins the game, so just hold on to the ball in each game about 200 yards, and if more, get more. Get as much as you can get and just show off this year.
Yeah, I think that's all the time we're going to do for this interview, but we really appreciate you coming in, Wakers, and maybe you can have you on again sometime later in the season now that you're a friend of our show here. So
I would love to come on.
We really, really appreciate it. Thank you. And we're going to be right back. We're going to talk a little bit of fantasy football before we head right over to the NFL and talk a little bit about some pick six games and their winners for this week. We'll be right back on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
All right, man. And you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
And welcome back into the WZND studio. We're here for the second half of the show. We're going to turn towards the NFL because it is kickoff weekend. We're joined by WZND News and Sports' Matt Cherry, who will be on the call this weekend for ISU football, first and foremost. So we've got to promote that a little bit alongside Braden Fogerson. So are you looking forward to that one, Matt?
Absolutely. It's been my first call in a whole summer, so I'm really happy to get back into it and watch some football.
Did you catch any of the Wisconsin ISU game last weekend?
Yeah, I definitely did. And I can't say I watched the whole game, but You know, it was just fun to see them play in Wisconsin, a big team like that. And I thought that it wasn't a complete loss. Like, sure, they lost. But I saw a lot of promise out of those guys on the offensive end of it. And I'm really excited to see what they do for the rest of the season.
So turning towards the NFL, I think we're going to take a couple minutes here before we get into our pick six contest and talk a little bit about something we haven't yet in the show as we've previewed the NFL, which is fantasy football. Something that's really popular these days, especially among our age. And we are all in a league together, but we have separate leagues as well. We had a draft last night. I missed the first couple rounds because I was taking a nap, so that was my loss. But Dane, I think you wanted to talk a little bit first about just fantasy for this season in 2022.
Well, I am in five leagues, so I would hope that I think the saying is like 10,000 hours equals perfection. We're probably at 10,000 hours and far from perfection. So I would just like to say in one of my first leagues, I got Christian McCaffrey in the third round, which it's a super flex, so I don't want you to be like, who are you drafting with? Are you in a two-man league? But and he has already been added to the injury report, so we're off to a hot start right now. And also, too, there's a couple players that I'm really high on and that I've seen consistently on my teams. I've got Dallas Goedert in a lot of leagues, and I was getting him in around, like, around round 7 or 8-ish, and then I have T. Higgins as my wide receiver one in a lot of leagues, which kind of it stinks because people are like, oh, Ja'Marr Chase, like he's the wide receiver one, but I think Chase is going to have some touchdown regression, and T. Higgins got caught at a record standing 4 times at the 1-yard line last year.
Yeah, so they just can't follow the other way for him this year, you know what I mean? The luck's going to eventually turn the other way.
Right, and like I'm really excited for this year. I love my like my big money league. I'm really excited about I got Derrick Henry with the 4th overall pick. I also got Nick Chubb in the 2nd round, and I wasn't planning on reaching on a quarterback early. Justin Herbert fell to me late in the 4th round, and I'm like, you know what? Like, I was really high on Burrow, Jalen Hurts, and Russell Wilson later, but I didn't want to take the gamble of them being gone. I'm like, I'm just going to take Jay Herbo with my 4th round pick. So I really felt like I built a pretty good cornerstone in my big money league.
Dane, not to flex on you, but I was able to get Nick Chubb in the 3rd round of our fantasy draft last night for ZND in a 12-man league.
That's nuts.
I can't believe you guys all let
that's
all
impressive.
Four, all three of you.
I don't count. I don't count.
Actually,
I was
Mikey
napping.
Wasn't there for it. So
it auto drafted me Kamara and Stephon Diggs. Well, the one thing I didn't like is they gave me 2 wide receivers before I had 2 running backs, which is never what I strategize. But what are you going to do? It was an auto draft.
Yeah,
Matt,
exactly.
How do you think you did in that draft last night?
So I did the first 7 picks, and then I auto picked for the rest of the time because
I did as well.
I really want to make a sandwich. this is actually the first fantasy I've done since high school, so
okay,
I'm
yeah.
not very into the fantasy thing. I want to get more into it, but I think I did well. I've got, as you were saying, Dane, you wanted Joe Burrow. I got Joe Burrow. Very happy with that pickup. Amari Cooper, who I've loved since he came into the NFL. But the interesting end of
you
it, I think, is my
Cooper.
Auto picks. For some reason, it gave me like a really sneakily good bench. You know, I've got Justin Fields. They're not even remotely the same, but
yes,
Justin Fields. And I, you know, I'm really excited to see what Justin Fields does. I know my boy's not going to disappoint me. No. Jacoby Myers, Garrett Wilson, which, you know, New York Jets, but still, I'm a fan of his. Damian Harris. I think I've got a solid team.
And you know what? ESPN tends to disagree with you, actually. You are projected to go dead last in our league right now, according to their power index.
You know what? It's the luck of the draw here. I'm not too upset about it. I'm just happy to be here.
Luck of the draw. You took Amari Cooper in the 3rd round.
Hey, the man had a game plan, and he stuck to it. And we're gonna have Matt on again in the fall. Or in the spring, excuse me, and he's going to be talking about how he won it all for our league after being ranked 12th in the power index. I can already see it.
Well, you can't win your fantasy football league at your draft, but you sure can lose it. So also, too, I found something that I noticed in all of my drafts were that I were high on certain teams and low on others. And I would say the teams that I were high on were the Philadelphia Eagles. I was also high on the Denver Broncos and then basically any AFC West team. But the teams I were low on where one team that I'm incredibly low on that a lot of people are high on is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think the damage that was done to their offensive line with the loss of Ali Marpet and the injury to Ryan Jensen is going to bring a lot of interior pressure to Tom Brady, and that's when he is at his worst. And then you see games like the Saints where they shut him out last year.
Do not count out Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. ever.
I forgot you're
ever.
A huge Brady stan.
He used the government name too.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't always a huge Brady stan, but like in the last like especially like last like 3 or 4 years, you just can't help but respect the man. He is the greatest player, greatest quarterback of all time.
Greatest quarterback, not most talented. And then this could get into a Brady versus Rodgers thing, where he's the GOAT, but Rodgers is the most talented thrower of the football ever. Do you disagree?
Yes, but there's gonna be a whole segment for that another day.
Okay.
But
maybe my last show we can just have it out for 15 minutes
talking about Brady versus Rodgers, but. I do have Tom Brady in all three of my leagues. And before, you know, everyone's going to say, oh, that's because he's a Brady fan. I did tweet at him and I said he does not give me points for being on The Masked Singer. So he needs to figure that out and actually play. But I don't know. I'm not one to reach for a young quarterback early on. Fantasy is not about quarterbacks, in my opinion. I'll draft as many running backs and wide receiver options as possible, and then I'll get a veteran quarterback. So I drafted Brady in like the 70s or 80s in all three of my drafts last three nights.
But take your guy, because like Lamar goes pretty high.
It's fine.
I'm insanely low on Kyler Murray. I don't even know why he gets really close to falling out of my top 10.
He was always a favorite of mine for the last few years, but he's fallen off.
And Blake and me are in agreement that we like Kirk Cousins, who is drafted as around QB 13 or 14.
Yeah.
We like him to finish as a top five fantasy quarterback.
I just don't like when the waterfall breaks open for quarterbacks. Because you see in like, it's always like the third or fourth round in every draft, you get somebody drafts Josh Allen, and then immediately the next pick is Mahomes, and immediately the next pick is Lamar Jackson.
Justin Herbert. That's actually exactly how my big money league
played
out.
And so it's a problem, because then there's the teams that are still like, oh, you know, I'm not doing that. Let's keep drafting running backs and wide receivers. And then there's the top five quarterbacks picked back to back to back to back in the same round. So I always think a good fantasy draft, everyone holds off on quarterbacks until a certain point.
Well, I agree with you completely. And I think that it's completely pointless to draft a quarterback in the top three, four rounds or whatever. There was a stat that I read the other day that said that the top fantasy quarterbacks every single week, weeks 1 through 16 or something like that, there was only a disparity of 0.6 points between, I think it was the top five guy and like the number 15 or number 16 guy. There's no value in getting guys like that early in the draft.
Well, that's why you also draft quarterbacks that have high passing offenses, like versus Joe Burrow, where he's in a run heavy and slow moving offense. Well, that's why I value Justin Herbert more. But I'm kind of inverse with you guys, where I value taking the quarterbacks higher and I wait on the tight ends, which is honestly the Zig where everyone zags. Because you know that there's going to be a top five fantasy tight end that doesn't even get drafted. Like, you're going to get off waivers.
Yeah. Once you get past the Travis Kelce and then the top like three or four, there's no reason to draft a tight end until well into the draft.
Right. And depending on PPR or not, like Kyle Pitts is like, people that are drafting him in around three or four, they're going for the home run. And I think he's got the skill set to do it, but it's going to be tough until you actually see it put together on film.
Well, I'll say this, guys. That would have been some great information to know last night. Because my tight end and QB came in the first three rounds.
Well, who were they? I don't remember who you picked up, though.
Kelce and Joe Burrow.
Okay, but those are two players who are going to really
get Kelce is worth
you
it.
You took Joe Burrow in the third round?
They're going to have production,
third or fourth,
though.
Yeah.
Dude. They're,
well, but again, though, that wasn't the first quarterback taken, though, I don't think. I think that was after what I was talking about, where the dam breaks open, and then every quarterback's drafted, and then you're left with all the veterans. So then you're looking at Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and that's pretty much it. Kirk Cousins, like we said.
Derek Carr.
Yeah, Derek Carr.
There was great value later in the draft, but also some of those guys, like, you're not going to get the rushing stats.
No.
And you need to take the risk on, like, I actually liked in our draft that I got Jalen Hurts, because in my other leagues, I basically hammered home three quarterbacks. I hammered home Herbert, Russell Wilson, and Herbert, Wilson, and why am I blanking? Joe Burrow. Those are the quarterbacks I hammered home. And then this one, I was like, I kind of don't want to get stuck just in case anything happens. So I was like, I'm going to go Jalen Hurts. And then I got Derek Carr as a backup. So I'm just like, I'm thrilled with my QB play.
Lots of great fantasy quarterbacks, no doubt about it. So you either get Justin Herbert, or if you're Team Chevy Levy, Nick Levy, you end up with Tua Tagovailoa as your QB1 for the season.
Some people think Tua is going to have a breakout year. Some people think this is it.
I'm not some people.
I don't know if I'm some people either. But you know, there were rumors that Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. was going to Miami. So and obviously, if the greatest quarterback ever went and played for your team, you don't play for your team anymore. So I don't think the Dolphins were exactly sold on Tua. So maybe he has a chip on his shoulder. He's ready to prove that he's an elite quarterback.
Well, they brought in Mike McDaniel to specifically help Tua. And their wide receiver core is so short with Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill that a lot of their plays are going to be yards after the catch. Also, one thing I want to stress, too, that was huge in all of my fantasy drafts, except my super flex league where I partner with a friend. In all of my standard scoring PPR drafts, I went two running backs in the first two rounds.
Because I've done that same thing.
The zero or hero running back strategy does not work, folks.
Mm-mm.
Like, what happens when they get injured? Like, it literally does not prep
already
for that.
Already McCaffrey. You know how many people picked McCaffrey first overall in leagues across America the last couple of days?
You have to go for the win, though. Yeah. And he's the...
I'm not saying it's a bad pick, but I'm just saying that's devastating. But you had to know that was happening. Maybe not. I didn't think before the first game was played, but
yeah, that's kind of nuts. And then Jonathan Taylor too, because this is probably the most debated first overall pick in years, I would say.
Yeah.
Jonathan Taylor had one of the worst running back one seasons last year that one had had in literally 5 years as well. And then if you look at, let's be real, the running back one last year was Derrick Henry. I'm not just saying that because I had him. Barring an injury, he was going to break records for fantasy running backs probably, especially as a guy that doesn't catch passes either.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to get into pick six. We're going to have six NFL matchups, the three primetime games, and three games of our choosing to pick the winners, and then week to week, we'll discuss who's, you know, hot on these streaks and who can't get a game right to save their life. So we'll be right back on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
And welcome back into The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Mikey Fernelli, Dane Dreyfus, Blake Borgar, and Matt Cherry here coming for you to you live from the ZND studio. And our last segment of the day here before 7 o'clock is going to be Pick 6, which is going to be a game we'll play every week. And we decide the winners of six NFL games, and we'll talk back the next week and see who got it right and who didn't. It's not an 100-yard play like the Wisconsin Badgers did in Wisconsin last weekend. That is not the pick six we're talking about. We're talking about a game.
Too soon, Mikey.
Oh, I thought that would at least get a laugh. But
nope.
No, that'll be what we're doing. Not an 100-yard pick six, but our own game pick six. So, Matt, thank you for joining us. Matt will be our guest today. We'll always have a guest total, so he's going to start that off. And Blake will be making David's picks, which he sent in. So Blake will be doing it for David. And I will also be doing my own. And Steve Cease, the faculty advisor for WZND, he will also be participating. But we will just read off his picks, which he told me this morning. So let's get started. 49ers and Da Bears. In Soldier Field, what could be one of Soldier Field's last home openers with new grass. Did you guys hear about that? They have new grass on the field in Soldier Field, apparently.
It went from Kentucky bluegrass to
Bermuda grass or something
Bermuda
like that.
Bermuda 31.
Yeah.
It's the first time a Bears head coach has ever requested that the grass be
I love
changed
it. I love the
field.
Initiative already. But Trey Lance and the Niners come to Soldier Field, and with new grass, will year two Justin Fields put on a show against a tough defense? Dane, start us off.
Well, with the injury to Kittle happening, the Bears could cover, but they will not win. They will lose to the 49ers and Trey Lance. Could Garoppolo make an appearance? I believe so if Trey Lance falters in the first half. But give me the Niners.
Dane's brought up a good point there. Dane, you said the Bears will cover. This is all straight-up picks. We're going to be doing not against the spread, just straight-up. So going forward, that we'll always know that. Blake, what do you think?
Well, putting myself in the mindset of the great David Moses here, he actually has Bear down as his pick for this game. He says the Fields is going to come out with a chip on his shoulder, whether he will admit it or not. They actually passed, of course, on Justin Fields in order to pick Trey Lance in that draft just a couple of years ago. I don't know exactly if I agree with that. I think that the Bears defense is going to falter a little bit, but I am by no means a Trey Lance believer. I would take the Niners, but I'm going to go with David here. Bear down.
Matt Cherry.
I'm also going to have to go with the Bears, Bears Nation,
though
we've lost good guys like Khalil Mack. I'm really excited to see what the new head coach, Matt Eberflus, I believe I'm saying that correct. I know he comes from a defensive background with the Colts, so I'm really excited to see what he does with this young offensive or defensive line for the Bears, and I got to go Bears.
You don't even know.
And I'm going to go with Da Bears as well. And this one, you can't help but root for the Bears here. This team and this offense for the Niners is not as good as made out to be. They had a couple good years because of their defense. And I think this Bears team could get a sneaky win here. Of course, I'm a Bears fan, but we're going to move on. Oh, first, Steve Cease said the 49ers. We're moving on to the Packers and Vikings. Dane had a connection with our interviewee earlier, Wankers Wright, when they decided they're both Packers fans and told each other on air. So that was a big moment.
It was cute.
Yeah, it was cute. We'll see what the picks are, though, for the Packers and Vikings. It's the opening battle of the NFC North's two favorites, unless you're Sports Illustrated, who said the Lions will beat the Vikings. And I still stand by the fact that I will shave my head if that's true. But will Rodgers start the season off with a bang, what could be a MVP-peat season, or will Captain Kirk start at offense and the Vikes prevail at home? Dane?
You know, I saw your guys' picks on a piece of paper, and my brain says the Vikings in this one, I'll be honest, but my heart says the Packers. So I'm going to go with the Packers, but here's the thing is I'm not going to be surprised if the Vikings take this. The Packers look like they might be going into week one without Alan Lazard. This Vikings offense is revamped, but if the Packers do win, it's going to be on the backs of their defense.
The second straight year that the Packers start out on the road against an NFC rival. We're taking the Vikings in this one to beat them the same way that the Saints did in Jacksonville, actually. What a weird game that was with the Saints being the host in Jacksonville. Aaron Rodgers will start off the consecutive year for 0-1.
I think Vikings are definitely going to take this one. They're coming in with a healthy offense. And like you said, Dane, they're going to need a lot of defense on Green Bay's side if they're going to, you know, take the win, but I think it's going to be evenly matched.
Non-PPR league, stack it up against just two rosters personnel. That offensive core for the Vikings is better than the Packers, not in quarterback sense, but in just the targets and the backfield. I think that Vikings team will always prevail against the Packers, at least in this week one, and they're at home. So I'm always very happy to pick the home team if I can. So I'm going to say Vikings, and Steve Cease also agreed on Minnesota. Taking a look at the Chiefs and Cardinals, this is our pick for just a game of the week. It's not a national game, it's not the Bears or Packers, but we just thought this is a competitive matchup. So I think we want to talk a little bit about Kyler Murray and Patrick Mahomes, which we did a little bit earlier, talking about Kyler Murray specifically, and how it's been kind of an up-and-down life for him in the NFL. And Patrick Mahomes, obviously, at this point, maybe even a future Hall of Famer, if it's not too early to say that. So two of the brightest young quarterbacks in the game in a tough inter-conference matchup to open the season. Who do you think, Dane?
So here's the thing. With it, Call of Duty hasn't come out yet, so Kyler Murray's going to be an elite quarterback for like 8 weeks. They don't have D-Hop. Marquise Brown was arrested for criminal speeding and somehow wasn't suspended. So I'm going the Chiefs here by a million. I don't see it for the Cardinals. I don't drink the Kool-Aid. My dad's a huge Cardinals fan. He doesn't drink the Kool-Aid. And I'm honestly just confused why anyone would think the Cardinals. I don't think this is going to be a close game. I also don't like to predict injuries. But with Kyler never really being able to stay healthy and with just a very athletic Chiefs defense, like, it just reeks of the first big injury of the season to Kyler. I don't know. That's just me, though.
Yeah, so David actually didn't give his pick for this one, so I'm going completely off of what I know. I think that the Cardinals have some pieces on defense that are nice. They have Buda Baker. They have half a game of J.J. Watt every season, apparently. They've got Byron Murphy over at corner. Yeah, they've got some nice pieces there, but outside of that, the rest of the defense is practically hopeless. I don't think that they could stop a runaway can of Chef Boyardee if they wanted to. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs, the seasoned veteran Patrick Mahomes at this point, to get the easy win.
Well, I think this one's a no-brainer. The Cardinals really drew a short straw with this matchup. You know, the Chiefs have a better line play on both sides of the ball, so I got to go with the Chiefs.
I'm going to round it out as well with Kansas City, but surprised he's not on here to explain this one. Steve did say the Cardinals. Oh. He thinks that the Cardinals will upset Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City.
That's making me feel way better about
and
my
the
Packers
Andy
pick.
Reid offense. But he's not a Cardinals fan, though. He's a Lions fan, so I'm confused what the thought process are there. We'll have to ask him tomorrow. I'm sure he'll defend himself, and we'll be able to report that next week. Taking a look at Monday Night Football, the world's first look at Russell Wilson without Seattle is in Seattle? Come on.
What?
Broncos country, let's ride.
Russell Wilson, oh my gosh, as a Bronco in Seattle.
Well,
what's going to happen?
I'm a little salty because he is a former Wisconsin Badger, so I'm still hurt, and I'm also a Badger fan. He's also a former NC State Wolfpack, but I'm just going to go on a limb here. I think Seattle gets absolutely blown out by Russell Wilson with his new-look offense, just a much better team all around. Geno Smith isn't the answer there. I think he's going to be better than Drew Lock could be, but I'm going to go with Denver.
Broncos country, let's ride.
I don't hate Geno Smith as much as people are giving him hate for. He was a pretty highly, like, sought-after recruit coming out of West Virginia. He looked awesome there with Tavon Austin. I don't know if you guys remember the highlights that came out of that.
That makes that play sick.
I still watch him to this day, but obviously the Broncos, they have a stellar defense. They have the weapons on the offensive side of the ball, and now they have Russell Wilson on top of that. I just hope that Seattle gives him a standing ovation as he's beating them 40-3 on national television.
Matt?
Well, the real definer here is who has Russell Wilson in this matchup, so Denver.
I don't even know if I should say it. I might just let Russell say it again.
Broncos country, let's ride.
And he's right. The Broncos will defeat the Seahawks in Monday Night Football. And I will be keeping that sound effect on the board so I can do it whenever we talk about the Broncos. Sunday Night Football. Or I should first say Steve also said the Broncos. Sunday Night Football, Buccaneers and Cowboys. I have his governor name written down again. Should I say it?
Please don't.
Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. is back for year 23. He's still got something left in the tank. Now with his championship caliber defense and some new offensive weapons, the Bucs are destined for another run at a title. In their way is week one is America's team, Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. After running one of the nation's best offenses last year, 2022 might be a make or break year for Dallas. Who will we take in this primetime Sunday matchup, Dane?
So this is weird, first of all, because this was the first game of the NFL season last year. I was actually in this booth working a shift, and I was very like, I liked the Buccaneers then because they were much healthier on defense and a much better team. I'm going to go Dallas here, because I think this is going to be a lot more on Dak. I think this is a battle of two teams that are really going to disappoint this year. But I'm also just interested to think of, like, when's the last time two teams played on week one that weren't in the same division but aren't in the same conference? Like, it's just kind of weird to me.
Yeah, it is weird, because usually it's got to be interconference or it's in the same division. That is a good point.
And the NFL is really big on parity, too, like, yeah, when it comes to the schedule. So I kind of don't understand
Maybe it is just a rematch of, like you said, a historic rematch between the two, because they kicked it off last year and they just like the matchup between two pretty solid teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, David right now says that Tom Brady is 6-0 against the Cowboys, and he has a tendency coming out of the gates hot. I tend to agree with him. I think the Cowboys got worse on the offensive side of the ball, letting go of Amari Cooper, as well as Lael Collins, one of the best run-blocking right tackles in the NFL. I think that that's going to hurt them a lot, especially because the Bucs added Akeem Hicks on their defensive line. They have Vita Vea, Akeem Hicks, and then they've got Devin White as well as Shaq Barrett. I mean, that defensive front seven is absolutely stacked. Bucs win.
I'm going Bucks as well. I think it's going to take a lot of offensive firepower from the Cowboys to keep it a close game, because I know you all know who Tom Brady is, especially you, Mikey. You know what he can do with 2 minutes left on the clock.
Exactly.
With that ball.
It should have been against the Rams last year in the playoffs, but the Rams found a way, and I got to give Matthew Stafford his credit where credit is due. They found a way to win that game, and I read something that Brady even quoted saying one of the reasons why he's coming back is because he felt like he had unfinished business after that game. Just like I said there, I'm going to say Tampa Bay in this one, and it'll be a tough one there in Dallas, because I don't think anyone even mentioned it, but it is in Dallas, which is going to be tough because obviously that's a huge stadium, lots of fans, and we'll have to see how that goes down. Thursday night football tonight.
What was Steve's pick?
Steve's pick was the Cowboys. Sorry. Yes. Thank you for reminding me, Dan. It was the Cowboys. So another upset there for Steve.
Now I feel worse about my Packers pick and the other pick that the Chiefs pick or whatever.
Yeah. So Steve said the Cowboys. And now we're looking at Thursday Night Football. That's tonight. That's right after the show. That's going to kick off there, and it is the Bills and the Rams defending their championship. What do we think in this one?
I know we have the Russell Wilson Broncos Country Let's Ride audio. Can we do an audio?
Broncos Country, let's ride.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mikey. Can we do an audio of me jumping through the table for Bills Mafia? Because I'm riding Josh Allen on his MVP season, winning their first week on the road against the reigning big game champs.
So David right now says that he has the Bills winning this one, easily championship favorites from him, and I hope he doesn't listen back to this part because I'm absolutely going to go against the grain of what he's saying. The Rams are an incredible team on both sides of the ball, and they added Bobby Wagner on top of that too, probably one of the best Mike linebackers in the game still, even though he's getting up there in age. I say Rams win, guys.
So we're going to say David's pick is Buffalo because you're speaking for David, but if he's wrong, you'll be able to rub that in his face because you did say the Rams in that one. So for the record, Blake Bogart believes the Rams, but as David Moses picks, we have Buffalo. I think that is that the first time you've gone against what he said, or you thought the same with the Bears game maybe? I don't remember.
I did disagree with him on the Bears one, but solely because I'm a Bears fan, I went with that one. But that is the first one I've actually disagreed with David on up to this point.
Matt Jerry.
Well, there's no disregarding that the Rams have one of the most powerful teams in the league right now, but the Bills also are coming into the season with a very high power ranking, and we also know that Matthew Stafford's had some elbow issues over the offseason, so I'm going to go with the Bills.
I'm going to try and go with the Rams here. And
There is do. Are you going
due
with the Rams?
Do or not, there's a try. I'm going to try and go with the Rams, though, because I say it like that because this is set to be a very tough game. This is a kickoff game that the NFL knew what they were doing. I know we were talking about bets before the game. The over is pretty much a lock in this one, I would think. Two high-powered offenses, two great quarterbacks. I think this is going to be a really tough one, but I'm going to go with the Rams because they're at home, and as Steve Cease and I were talking about this morning, and he did pick the Bills, by the way, but as Steve Cease and I were talking about this morning, I don't know why the defending champs are playing at home and they're still considered the underdog. I get the Bills have a lot of offensive hype. That's natural. They always do. But I don't know how you can call them the underdogs. It's weird to me.
The Bills would have been champs if the overtime rules in the NFL weren't stupid. But that's just my opinion. Personally, I see what the Bills have put together on paper. They have the best offense, and they have a top five defense. The Rams, I feel like you kind of know what you're getting with them at this point. But the spread's 2.5, so no one knows what to expect. Anything can happen week one, and it's any given Thursday. So
live text from David Moses, who is listening in. He just said Bills Mafia. So he heard Blake.
All right, I'm jumping to the table.
He heard Blake try and change the pick. And David, if you're in Seattle listening to us, thanks for listening. And to everyone else, thank you for listening. This has been Mikey Fernelli, Dane Dreyfus, Blake Bogart, and Matt Cherry. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Red Zone, and good night.
Hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again?
Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.